Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Good morning, Pittsburgh. Beautiful Saturday morning. Going to warm up to the mid-40s and then mid-50s tomorrow, and long-range forecast next week. We're hopping into the 60s. I'm liking it. It's probably nice and warm and toasty and Big D, and that's Dallas, and that's where Jonathan Bomboli of the Trib is. Howdy, howdy, JB, as I said to you on the text last night.
Yeah, how's it going?
You got your Spurs on. You're ready to go. I'm thinking this is going to be a little bit of a reunion with the Penguins and Jamie Oleksiak, but Oleksiak has been scratched 7 of his last 11 games down there in Dallas. He can't be happy being a star again and sitting in the press box almost every night.
Yeah, and it's kind of been circumstances that got him into the lineup too, like a guy suspended or a guy's hurt or something like that. So, yeah, it looks like he's a 7th D at this point in Big D.
All right, now the Penguins, they finally exercised the demons in a way, I guess, of overtime in the shootout, but they still haven't exercised the demons of those late killer goals that are stealing, you know, points in regulation. And it happened again last night. Boy, I did not like that bad angle through the crook of the arm away from the post given up by Matt Murray. But aside from that, you know, you look at, you know, Murray's last three, he's got a goals against about 1.5, a save percentage over 95. His last 10, goals against at 2 and a save percentage around 94. You can't argue with those numbers. It's just that odd late goal that kills him.
Yeah, it's a really weird stretch for him. I mean, normally you'd have the late goals would be part of a stretch where you're struggling, and he's not struggling. It's just, you know, pucks going in at inopportune times. And, just as a whole, the Penguins are struggling with this because all the late goals that we're talking about, 5 of them in the last 14 games, in the last 5 minutes to tie, they're all so different. Like that one was, you'd call that one a goaltender error. And then before that, it was a defensive zone faceoff that they didn't win. And then, you know, before that, it was they tried to make a play in the neutral zone and then ended up giving up an odd man rush to the Flyers. And it goes on and on. But, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint any one thing that's going wrong except for the fact that they're giving up late goals. So because of that, they don't think that there's like a big hole in the game. They like how they're playing in general. They just need to close out games better. I don't know if that's a mentality or if it's just a sort of the way the puck bounces. You're going to have a stretch where you're bad in those spots. Earlier, you had a stretch where you were good in those spots. I don't know. But it's definitely a really sort of, odd, unusual development late in the season.
What I do like, and I think it's pretty enjoyable pretty much for the fans, is that, boy, the last handful of games have all been, playoff-style hockey. And I stress this over and over again, one of the big factors when you do get to the playoffs is special teams. Now, their penalty killing has been pretty good. As a matter of fact, on the road, it's been great. They've killed like 13 straight on the road. But, boy, they need to get that power play going big time, JB.
They do. They haven't had that many opportunities, really. I mean, because when you talk about playoff-style hockey, that means that they're, generally you hear fewer whistles. They haven't had a game where they've had, 3 or 4 or 5 of them to really get going. Not many anyway. That's a good – since the trade deadline, they've cut their goals against way down, almost by a goal. But their goals for have also come down. So you got to figure out how to sort of make up that difference. And the easiest way to do it is score a couple power play goals. So I think Kessel's struggles are magnified in that area because, he's a guy who – when he's at his peak, is really performing and producing on that power play. So that's part of it. Obviously, Malkin being out is an issue on the power play, too, because he's got that big shot from the circle. The easiest way to get the balance to where they want it in terms of offense and defense is score a couple power play goals.
Speaking of Kessel, it's not as if he's trying. He and people say, he's not 5-on-5. He's not doing the things he needs to do. But I think the perfect example was, and he's been doing this in his entire career, coming, down the right wing, snapping, one of those snapshots, shooting on the off foot, and he had the top corner picked. And, the goaltender just got enough of a piece of it off the shoulder to deflect it wide. And to me, you know, he's doing everything he needs to do there. It's just some of it is just being snake bit, I think, for him. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do, and here's why. I remember the play you're talking about. Like, I thought Rene may have got it with the shaft of his stick. I mean, it was that much of a margin for error. And he had another great chance from the slot in that game, too. The reason why, like, this is Phil Kessel's game. I mean, and when pucks aren't going in, then you start talking about his struggles 5-on-5 and the pucks that he turns over and the battles that he doesn't win. And when he's scoring goals, he's doing those exact same things. I mean, this is his game. This is what he does. So in order to be, you know, an effective player, he has to put pucks in the net. I mean, that's his value to a team. So I don't think there's a big difference in terms of his effort or style of play or, you know, number of chances or number of shots on goal. All those are fairly consistent. It's just a matter of, you know, beating goaltenders. I'd also point out that and I know people hate to hear this, but the last few games have been a run of really good goaltending against the Penguins.
Yep.
I mean, you look at Jordan Binnington and Carter Hart. Those two kids are big-time rookies. You follow that up with Pecorine, who's having a great season. So the goaltending will soften up a little bit coming up here. You got the Rangers situation. And, you know, they own Lundqvist, or they start Georgiev, who last time they played him, they lit him up. Rene is nowhere near as good on the road as he is at home. So I'm interested to see if these guys start scoring some goals when the goaltending situation sort of softens up a little bit.
Yeah, and they had Rennie's number. I mean, regardless whether it's home or the road, they have him much more on the road than at home, which was surprising that he actually played so well the other night. So you really got to give him that. A couple of guys, the newcomers, I want to get your thoughts on McCann, who seems to have cooled off. And even though Bjugstad hasn't necessarily, you know, put up numbers as far as goals and assists, I really like the way Bjugstad is playing. And he had a number of opportunities the other night. He's taking the puck, you know, he's using the big body, you know, he's going to the net, he's getting the shots. I like his game, and you know, I like McCann's game, but he has cooled off big time. And, of course, he's off Sidney's line, too. That probably has an impact as well, I would think.
I think it's a huge part of it. I think that line with Bluger and Kessel and McCann is just kind of pieced together right now with Malkin out. So they're they don't have any real options in terms of changing it. So they just have to kind of stick with it and hope that they break out a little bit. The reason they don't have options is because they like their first and third line a lot. And Bjugstad's a big part of that. Like that third line with Simone and Bjugstad and Hornquist. I was looking at numbers. I wrote about it yesterday. They're a dominant line when it comes to things like shot attempts and scoring chances. And they've played together for about 10 games now. It's 10 of the last 11. They haven't been on the ice for a goal against, not a single one at even strength.
Huh.
Now, so that's really impressive. Now, they've only scored 3 themselves. So their results sort of profile like a classic checking line. And so to me, that means two things. First of all, with Malkin out, they got to score some more goals. You know, turn some of that possession advantage into a scoreboard advantage. That's number one. But number two, if they keep playing like a, you know, if they keep profiling like a traditional checking line, then you get Malkin back and that second line starts scoring a little bit. Then your first three lines are looking like first three lines should. So there's some, that's reason for optimism, the way those three guys have come together. Bjugstad's a big part of that, the way he protects the puck down low. You know, big lanky guy. It's hard to get it away from him. I think he's been a real nice addition in that spot.
JB, I was happy and we're with Jonathan Bomboli. You can read his great stuff on the Trib. He does such a great job, and I always like talking hockey with JB. I want to get your thoughts on Adam Johnson being called up at the juggle in the lineup. Joe Blandisi getting sent down with Riekkala. I kind of expected Riekkala to go down even a little bit earlier to get him some playing time and maybe to help the baby Penguins get into the playoffs, which it doesn't look like that's going to happen because they lost again last night and they're getting way back. But in any case, it was a short sample size. I think he only got 7 shifts in a game against Nashville. What do you make of Adam Johnson? I guess a little reward for scoring 18 at the American Hockey League level.
Yeah, and he also, I mean, he can really skate. So in terms of pace, he you know, he fits right in at the NHL level. And I think it's tough because I think I think Mike Sullivan, at this stage of the season with, you know, the playoff race being what it is and you've only got 7 games left, I think he's reluctant to put in, you know, to really let a kid who hasn't played in the NHL, you know, give him anything but a really short leash. And, you know, I understand it. I mean, it's not outrageous to do that. You'd like to see, you know, a little more of what Johnson could do, because, I mean, I thought in his shifts, he looked really good. He's annoying on the forecheck because of that speed.
Uh-huh.
And when his teammates know how fast he is, like I noticed a couple of plays where Cullen realized how fast he was and kind of threw pucks into space for him to let him go chase him. So if you were to develop some chemistry there, he could be a weapon. But it's tough at this time of year to work in a new guy like that.
All right, final thing for you, JB, and I've been thinking about this as Olli Määttä is getting close to a return. I want to leap forward in time a little bit because, you know, it hit with him coming back and Rikkola down and the dearth of defensemen that this team has. I was thinking the other day that if Jim Rutherford gets creative before the draft, he could package one of those defensemen with Tristan Jarry and potentially come up with a high first-round draft pick and maybe a young guy, a future young guy for this team moving forward, because they do have a lot of defense, and I don't know what they want to do with Jarry. I think they're happy with DeSmith as a backup, and they could do whatever. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe it's Määttä, maybe it's Pettersson, but they got some young guys, and I think one of those teams, maybe in the top 10 of the draft, you know, would be looking for two guys that could step in and play pretty much right away.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems I don't know that it seems to me that that's a little ambitious to think that one of those D would bring a pick that high. You could package your own pick, you know, and with one of those defensemen and move up into the you know, the first few picks or whatever. That's an option. The bottom line is that when you look at the cap situation, somebody's got to go, and probably, you know, when you look at, in terms of lefty-righty matchups, it probably has to be a lefty. Because, you know, you'd think Goodbranson is a guy that might be movable, but then you're leaving yourself short on the right side. So it really sort of narrows down to Määttä, really. And he's a young guy with cup experience. He's signed to a reasonable contract. So is he going to be coveted at the draft if they decide to trade him? Sure he is. So, you know, I don't know that it's really a lemons into lemonade situation, the fact that you're tight to the cap, so you got to make the best of it. It might be a little better situation than that. But it's definitely, yeah, I mean, you know, well, and there's still a lot of story left to be written.
I mean,
we're talking about the end of the regular season and the playoffs, and we might have different opinions about players, you know, after we see how the story ends.
Yeah, I was just jumping ahead in my own mind a little bit, and I wanted to throw that at you.
Yeah.
And I think they have to make a decision on Jarry too, because they're going to be paying him. You know, they can't send him down. They can't clear him through waivers. He's on a one-way deal next year. It's not like he's making minor league money when he goes down. You know, they need that decision as well. JB, always great to talk to you. Enjoy your time. And Big D, enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up again soon. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, we'll do, Tom.
All right, there he goes. Jonathan Bomboli of the Trib. I love talking to JB. Hey, I've got some notes here I wanted to pass along to you about, you know, some of the other Penguin prospects that are actually they're in the playoffs. They're beginning the playoffs in juniors. So we'll bring you up to speed there. I mentioned the Baby Pens not looking like they're going to make the playoffs. This would be the first time, by the way, that the organization's minor league clubs, the Baby Penguins at Wilkes-Barre and the Wheeling Nailers, both of those teams won't make the playoffs. The first time that has happened since 2002.